Welcome back to the Chasing Tone podcast. I, of course, am Brian Wampler. And today I take some more questions from you, the podcast listeners. Those questions are, what is the difference between low, medium, and high gain, technically? And I don't go too far off the rails off that. I still try to make sure that everybody else understands it if you're not an engineer. Next question is, do cheap pedals sound cheap due to the placebo effect? And why we don't make pedals designed to work with one specific amp only? So let's jump right into it. Well, today's question comes from Jerry Burris. Jerry says this, Brian, have you ever thought about making amp-specific drive pedals rather than pedals that emulate a specific amp? Meaning instead of making a Marshall-sounding pedal, making a drive pedal that's designed to work with an actual Marshall amp? Due to how differently all amps respond to a specific pedal, why not make a pedal for a specific style of amp that complements their characteristics? A drive pedal for use with Fender amps, a drive pedal for use with Vox amps, etc. You could even do like a Dr. Z type of thing. Maybe you've already thought of this and dismissed it, but what are your thoughts? Thanks, and I'll hang up and listen. Well, Jerry, here's the deal, and this kind of is a peek behind the curtain of the pedal business. A lot, and not all, but a lot of the quote-unquote, let's say, Marshall-style pedals, okay? A lot of that stuff that you see from the hundreds of pedal builders are just regular old distortion circuits with cool graphics, and a good marketing spin on it. Now, that's not true across the board, but there's a big bulk of them that might take, let's say, you know what, I've actually seen people take like tube screamers, stock tube screamer circuit, and call it a Marshall-sounding pedal, okay? So, and that's what I mean. Like, you get some of that stuff. But there's a... You don't want to niche things too much. So basically what you're asking is, why not make a pedal that is only made to use with a Marshall JCM 800, right? Or, that's just an example. The problem is that not everyone plays a JCM 800. And it's not, you can't really, as a company and as a business, it's very hard to make one pedal for such a specific use that, 95% of your other customer base don't have a use for. And then there's also the idea that just because it is designed to work with like work with only a Marshall JCM 800, it doesn't mean it's not going to sound good through a Vox or through a deluxe reverb or anything like that. In fact, more than anything, I think you'll find a lot of distortion pedals will have enough variance in the tone controls, I hope so by, this day and age, that they will work with the Vox and the deluxe reverbs and the Marshalls and the Bassmans and all that stuff. In fact, that's one of the big reasons why you see so many tone controls on our stuff is because I want to make sure that it's going to sound good with all the different types of amps and pedals. So... it's possible, yes. Not very practical, though. Not as a business. Now, I mean, if you're a DIY type guy and you want to do that, I think the Timmy pedal, I think that started out as a pedal that Paul Cochran wanted to use, I want to say with his Marshall. And so he kind of designed that for his use with the Marshall. As I understand it correctly, Paul, I apologize if I got that totally wrong. It's been a few years, but... I think that was one of those circumstances where he designed it for his purpose, for his specific amp, and it just so happened that it sounded great with a bunch of different amps. So it's not totally impossible. I think that it's a bad business decision unless you want to, you're going to make a couple here and there out of your garage somewhere. That might be a little bit different. I mean, you probably could do that and flip them on eBay or Reverb or, something like that. But for a business like us, it's just not something we're interested in doing. I would rather make a pedal that's going to sound great with a bunch of different amps. All right, and the next question comes from Michael Montano, I believe is his name. He says, "Hello, my name is Michael. I've been listening to the podcast for a few months now and wanted to reach out and say thank you." You're welcome, Michael. "It's truly an inspiration. I'm 25 and have started doing basic modifications to my old trainer amp. Only from listening closely to guys like you. Again, thank you." Well, again, you're welcome. Glad you like it. "I have a question, and I hope this is the right place to reach you for this sort of thing." Indeed it is. Podcast at WamplerPedals.com. "I have a Denelectro Cool Cat Fuzz version 2. I'd like to modify the pedal for all-out craziness and give it away as a gift. The pedal, to my ears, doesn't have much life and doesn't have much of a fuzz feel. It's sort of woolly, but not really. So is it a placebo effect that this cheap pedal sounds cheap to me? I'd love to make this pedal as extreme as possible by attempting some modifications. Do you have any recommendations? I was able to read portions of a book you wrote due to someone posting a link on an old GearPage thread. I hope you don't mind, but I enjoy it so much. I don't know what any of the values really mean, but I like opening pedals and amps up and staring at them until they make sense. So far, I just don't know how to transfer the ideas based on the quote-unquote French toast or Boss Overdrive to my pedal specifically. I know you're busy, and if you don't have time for this sort of thing, though, through email, I completely understand. But thanks for the podcast. Thank you very much. Music is my passion. You've been a huge role in encouragement in making the leap into modifications." Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate that greatly. Glad you enjoy the stuff. So let's back up here a little bit. Denelectro Cool Cat Fuzz version 2. "I'd like to modify the pedal for all out craziness and give it away as a gift." Okay, so as a guy that likes to modify stuff, I don't really do it for money anymore, just too busy like trying to make new pedals, trying to design new stuff. Every now and then I will, for fun, when I, have some free time or just get the wild hair, I may modify something, throw it up on Reverb or flip it somewhere, but not very often. But I'm not really sure what all out craziness means. So that's hard. We have to define that if we're talking about electronic stuff. Like, what does all out craziness mean? Does that mean it's going to be super, super high gain, or is it going to oscillate and make weird noises? What does that mean exactly? So he says, "It's sort of woolly, but not really. Is it a placebo effect that this cheap pedal sounds cheap to me?" Now that is an interesting thought, because you'll find in a lot of pedals, and again, this isn't completely all across the board. This is in some situations with some pedals at some times. Some of the parts that you may find in a $25 pedal or $35, an inexpensive pedal, some of those parts may be the exact same parts that you find in a $300 pedal. Now, not completely across the board, but let's say we're talking resistors and capacitors. It's possible that the resistors and capacitors are from the same company that you would find in $300 pedal. And that's not good or bad. I mean, like a resistor, if you buy one resistor, I mean, it's like pennies. A capacitor, depending on what type, it could be 10 cents to 10 bucks each. Now, you're not going to use a whole lot of $10 capacitors in a pedal, because no one's going to pay $600 for a pedal. Well, not very often. And I certainly wouldn't recommend it. But anyways, at least not a dirt pedal. So I'm trying to gather my thoughts here, because it's an interesting, excuse me, it's an interesting way of evaluating pedals. Like, some people will say the parts on this $300 pedal are just way better than this $50 pedal. Sometimes, yeah, sometimes that is part of it. Other times, the circuit on that $300 pedal is way better than the $50 pedal. And there's other things that go into it, PCB type and construction, the way it's laid out, the quality of potentiometers, the quality of switches, and to probably the biggest degree, customer service, really. I mean, like, if you have a problem with your $50 pedal, how easy is it going to be to get it fixed or replaced? How quick, how easy, how much pain do you have to go through? So you have that as well. So you have like a lot of guys that will make fantastic pedals, and they may be clones. They may be just, you know, another Fuzz Face or another Big Muff or whatever. But these guys may have fantastic service where if you have a problem, you can literally call them up on the phone and say, hey, I have a problem, and they'll walk you through it on the phone. So you're probably not going to find that with less expensive brands. You're probably going to go through some unanswered emails. And in my experience before I really started selling pedals and stuff, there were times where I had a problem with a brand or with a pedal. And I would reach out to the brand and say, I have this problem. And they would say, it's a throwaway pedal. You know, it's like 40, you know, you spent $40 on it. Not really under warranty. We're not really going to do anything with it. Sorry. Best of luck next time. You can always go to our website and buy a brand new one. And I mean, so you can't really fault them for that. It is an inexpensive device, right? I mean, there's a difference whenever you're buying something, you know, the cheapest thing you can find somewhere. And there's a difference between doing that and comparing it to the same type of thing on a different medium. So, you know, I'm trying to think of a good comparison. So I like using food analogies. So, you know, you can get a cheeseburger from McDonald's, but you can get a fantastic cheeseburger from, you know, a local shop that may be in your area that just, you know, uses the best beef and it's organic and it's grass-fed beef and they make their own buns and they make their own ketchup and mustard and et cetera, et cetera. Yes, they're both cheeseburgers, but one is completely different than the other in quality. So with this, I mean, to kind of get back to answering your question, is there a reason why it sounds cheap? I don't know. You know, that's a thing you can do, and thing I've seen other people do, is take those internal guts, rehouse them into a different enclosure, and let your friends play it. Don't tell them what it is, but let your friends play it and see what they say. If they love it, then, you know, that may speak volumes. That may mean that your eyes are deceiving you and your brain has already told you that it's going to be a cheap pedal and therefore not going to sound as good. So there is some of that. There are bad, terrible even sounding pedals that are inexpensive, and there are some great ones that are inexpensive. Same thing with expensive pedals. There are some very expensive pedals that sound pretty crappy, and there are some that sound really great. So that's you can't really base things on price. It's kind of an all around encompassing ideology, I guess. Okay, so I think that's the basic part of his question. Yeah, as far as mods for the French Toast, I'm sorry, for the Cool Cat Fuzz, I would have to know what specifics you're talking about, like exactly what craziness means. And even then, I mean, I can offer some general guidelines, but you may do them and you may be like, oh, that's not at all what I was thinking. So as with anything DIY related, I highly suggest maybe starting from some of those recommendations, tweaking from there. All right, and this next and last question comes from Michael Freer. Michael says, my dearest Brian, I have an idea for a Chasing Tone episode. Well, you came to the right place, Michael, because here I am. But first, some background. I've been in the audio business since the middle 70s. I have worked for a speaker manufacturer. I've been in retail home and car audio, video, and worked as a front of house engineer. I've even dabbled a bit in a home recording studio. As such, I have a fairly good grasp and understanding of gain structures as it relates to connecting different items of equipment together. But for some reason, I am unable to wrap my mind around the differences between low gain, medium gain, and high gain pedals and amplifiers. If you could take some time to explain some of the geekier and nerdier aspects of the different gain types, maybe I can begin to understand this aspect. Yes, I'm looking for more the technical side of this, as that's just the way my brain works. Anyways, have a wonderful day. Hug the kids, kiss the wife, pet the cat, and thank you for your show and your pedals. Well, Michael, keep in mind that very few of us listening to this podcast are going to be engineers, so I'm going to do what I normally do with most everything, which is layman term a lot of stuff. So try to phrase it in a way that most of us can relate to. If you want like really detailed engineering terms and terminology, I would highly suggest going to somewhere like DIYStompBoxes.com. Go to the forum there and ask them about the differences between low and high gain and clipping. Okay, so that'll get you a lot of responses from a lot of very, very bright people. Okay, so for everyone else out there listening, okay, here's the deal. So we do have, meaning us in the pedal industry, have pedals that we'll call low gain. We'll have pedals that we'll call medium gain and pedals that we'll call high gain. Sometimes, like let's say like the Pinnacle, for example, can do lower gains, medium gains, and higher gains. It can do all those. Other pedals are more of a lower gain type of thing, like a Tube Screamer, not very high gain. Although, technically, there is a lot of gain in that circuit, but it doesn't have a lot of hard clipping. Now, the thing is, a lot of us guitar players, when we call gain, is actually a combination of gain and signal clipping. So generally, high gain is where you do have a lot of gain. And let me back up a little bit. Imagine gain as a multiplication factor. So imagine if the volume coming in, if you amplify that 100 times, but the device that it is amplifying doesn't have the ability to make it 100 times louder, it distorts it, okay? It distorts it somewhat. So you have that gain, which is actually clipping, because gain is just like, it's math. But when you apply higher gain signals with clipping that's going to clip the signal harder, meaning going to, if you, I did a video on this where I actually drew out like the sine waves and how the clipping will actually kind of cuts off the top of the sound waves. Fuzz cuts it off, makes it almost square because it cuts it off the top of the sine waves so much, top and bottom of the sine waves so much that it looks almost like a square wave. So even with the same amount of technical gain applied, you can get low gains, medium gains, and high gains based on how you're clipping that signal. So, you know, if you're soft clipping like a Tube Screamer, it's not going to sound with the same amount of gain. So if you're only changing where the diodes are in a Tube Screamer circuit, then you can get a lowered gain circuit. You can also kind of approach a medium gain. Usually if it's asymmetrical clipping, it's going to sound to the ear like it's a little bit higher, quote-unquote, gain. Once you get past where it's trying to boost the volume, once that first stage, that first gain stage, if you clip that to ground, then, or let's call it hard clipping. If you do hard clipping there, then it's going to sound like it's a heavier distortion. In fact, I think MXR did that with, what was it called? The Distortion Audio Plus or Super Distortion Plus or something like that, where they took kind of a Tube Screamer circuit and they hard clipped it rather than soft clipped it. Something like the Pinnacle, I'm actually changing part of the gain stage structures. So it literally is increasing the gain. And since those are JFET circuits arranged in like a mu amp type of configuration, which is going to mean nothing to most of us, but the type of configuration they are, they're going to saturate a lot more whenever you add up that gain. So there's not clipping diodes in that type of circuit, but for the most part, it's going to clip it harder rather than softer. So we tend to get gain confused with clipping. So I know it's very hard to explain it on a podcast where you can't see me. So hopefully you can find that video on YouTube if you want to check out more. I put it out about a year ago. Forget the name of it. Look up gain and clipping on the Wampler Pedals channel, and I'm sure you'll find it. So it should be pretty easy. I think it's called The Difference Between Overdrive, Distortion, and Fuzz. I think that's what that video is called. And there again, on that video, I kind of go through the same thing, explaining that gain is basically just a multiplication factor of, well, it's voltage, but let's call it volume, because guitarists generally don't talk about the voltage coming out, as, you know, referring to that as a signal. So, yeah, hope that helps you. And thanks for the email, everyone. So thanks so much for listening to Chasing Tone Podcast. I really appreciate it. By the way, we just released a new pedal. Make sure you check it out. It's called the Tumnus Deluxe. It is based off the Tumnus with added EQ features and a hotter setting so you can get a higher gain. And I know it's a little odd because we just released the Paisley Drive Deluxe like 3 weeks ago. So that's like two pedals in the span of 1 month. Right here before Black Friday. So if you're listening to this after November 19-ish or so, after November 20th, I think, is when this drops, then those pedals are out. If you're listening to this like a year later, those pedals have been out, and this is old news. But anyways, thanks for listening. If you have any comments or questions, I'd love to answer them on the show. Email podcast@wamplerpedals.com. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.